Lake Effect continues. I'm Mitch Teich. We're forecast to have pretty quiet weather over the Thanksgiving holiday. But as people in the storm-tossed northeast can attest, November can be a pretty turbulent transitional period for the weather. That was certainly the case in November 1975. Two fierce storms collided over Lake Superior on the 9th and 10th of that month. The weather was so rough, it led to the sinking of the SS Edmund Fitzgerald, a modern ore ship that was considered all but unsinkable. The wreck, which killed all 29 aboard, was immortalized in Gordon Lightfoot's iconic song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's been chronicled in numerous books, but despite years of study, all the possible explanations for its sinking remain merely theories. A book by Kenosha writer Michael Schumacher brings the story of the Milwaukee registered ship and the theories of its sinking together. Mighty Fitz has recently been reissued by the University of Minnesota Press, and Schumacher joins us on the line now to talk about it. Welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure. It's always good to talk about these books.
Most of us are probably familiar with the Edmund Fitzgerald, if for no other reason than the Gordon Lightfoot song. But give us some background about the ship itself, if you would. This was not an especially old ship as of 1975, right?
No, it wasn't. It was a very modern ship, and it was for a long time the biggest or longest ship on the lakes. And it was. This is what makes the story so shocking, I think. Equipped with everything you could possibly want. The best communications, everything about this was first rate and modern. And so when a ship sinks without issuing an SOS call, the radio equipment is still where it was supposed to be rather than picked up in, you know, in haste. It tells you something about the sinking, but I think creates a sort of a mystique that other boats don't have because it was so new. It was an absolute strong, muscular vessel that could have, God, if it hadn't sunk, it would still be considered just reaching its middle age now.
Well, and this is also a ship that had some significant ties to Milwaukee.
Yes, it did, because the insurance company was out of Milwaukee.
This is Northwestern Mutual.
Yes. And if you look at the Fitzgerald, if you look at pictures of it then or today on the bottom of the lake, that's what it says, Milwaukee. That was its home port. And for me personally, I was aware of it before the Lightfoot saw it for that reason, because I was raised in Milwaukee, and even though I was living here in Kenosha when the Fitzgerald went down, I always read the Milwaukee Journal, or now the Journal Sentinel. And that was a big story. You know, the Fitzgerald, it's a big story anywhere, anytime a big boat goes down. But when its home port is Milwaukee, it's going to get a little bit more play, and it did.
Well, and so talk about the master and the crew. This was likewise, if the ship itself was robust, the master and the crew were pretty experienced.
Yes, they were. That's one of the things in the Lightfoot song that's interesting, because he talked about the they were well-seasoned, I think was the way
right.
He put it. They were. Ernest McSorley was a terrific master, and the people he had working under him were as good a crew as you can find in the Great Lakes. And when you said something about the captain, I just saw the other day, it was this wonderful, wonderful photograph. McSorley didn't like getting his picture taken. There's only one that I've ever seen of him until the other day. He would shy away from it. It was like an ID picture that they always used on everything. This was a picture. Some little girl had gone on Edmund Fitzgerald and was doing a tour and asked to have a picture taken with him, and it was. And I saw this photo, and it's the dearest thing you've ever seen. Because people think of these captains as being these sort of grumpy old men, you know, and that's what they're called. That's their nickname, the old man. You can be 27, and you're still the old man. if you're the captain. And he was really an interesting guy from everything I've heard. The crew, they had some young people on board, but this wasn't a boat that people just signed on to for a trip or two and then jumped off. This was one people aspired to work on. And when you got on this boat, you stayed on the boat. And I think that's going back to what you said before about it being fairly new. It was new. It had all the good things that you'd want. The crew quarters were exceptional. People wanted to serve on this. So once you got on, you stayed on. So he had a good experience group with him.
Well, and so let's talk then about the wreck itself and what led up to the wreck. The Fitzgerald had loaded up with taconite pellets in Superior, Wisconsin, and it was headed for where?
It was headed. Gordon Lightfoot said it was going to Cleveland. It was not. It was going to a little port right outside of a loading dock, just outside of Detroit, and it shouldn't have been a very difficult journey, especially for a boat the size of the Fitzgerald. And there was another one following the Fitzgerald that made it through the storm. And the captain of that boat said he had been in storms worse than that one, but never where it was so localized. You could all of a sudden find yourself under total assault in one little area. And apparently what happened, the Fitzgerald had this moment where it hit a really bad stretch right when it was near these two islands, Caribou and Michipicoten, which is on the east side of Lake Superior. It's technically in Canadian water. And Bernie Cooper, the master of the ship following the Fitzgerald, watching them on the radar, so he's going in there a little tighter than I want to be, because shoals are notorious for whipping up really bad water.
I think you're right. The shoals there had not actually been mapped since, like, 1918.
Right, and they found a new one. And they're just absolutely certain, at least a lot of, you know, the people, that the Fitz grounded on that shoal. That it, you know, you didn't have a lot of room. You know, you're getting bounced around up and down in the sea. You come down and you hit bottom. It didn't damage the Fitzgerald enough to sink it immediately. But let's suppose it ruptures a few hull plates. And they know that something happened of a dramatic nature right then, because McSorley talked to Bernie Cooper, and he says he's taken on a list. And Cooper says, well, do you have your pumps going? And he says, yes, I do. So he was pumping water out of it that far up. And the problem with the Fitzgerald was that it was a big boat. It couldn't just float into any harbor. And so it really had to make a run to Whitefish Point or nothing. And it almost made it, you know, very close. They had probably an hour, a little over an hour to go, and they would have been safe. And I believe that he thought he was safe to the moment the boat sank.
Well, and at one point in there, he also loses the Fitzgerald loses its radar. So Bernie Cooper, who's on board the Arthur Andersen, is helping guide him through this.
Right, he was his eyes, so to speak. And it's weird because the storm was just bad enough it blew out the Whitefish Point lighthouse too. That wasn't functioning that night, and so they didn't even get, if not nothing else, the symbolic encouragement of seeing the light in the distance and going, oh, we're almost home.
At what point then did the world lose contact with the Fitzgerald? You write the captain of the Andersen, the Bernie Cooper, got in touch with the Coast Guard when it disappeared, but the Coast Guard wasn't even convinced that a ship that size could be gone.
Yes, well, it's very hard to believe that a ship that size could sink. Believe me, I got a little anecdote to tell you, but I'll answer your question first. It was about 10 after 7 in the evening that the Andersen and the Fitzgerald were on the radio back and forth, and they asked McSorley, how are you doing with your problem? And they're always careful on the lakes not to, you know, say too much because people are listening in. And they didn't want to freak out the families of the people in the Fitzgerald or get the people talking. So we just said, your problem. And he says, we're holding our own. And those were the last words anybody ever heard out of the Fitzgerald. Within 5 minutes, it had disappeared from Bernie Cooper's radar. And so, you know, a big, powerful boat like the Fitzgerald, it seemed impossible that it went down. It was very hard for people to believe that it went down. But the fact of the matter is, it did. It's in two pieces at the bottom of Lake Superior.
Well, and you're right that even though the wreckage was eventually found and extensively photographed, there has never been any consensus as to what actually happened that did the ship in. Why will we never know for sure?
Well, first of all, if you've seen the wreckage at all, and I haven't been down to the wreckage, obviously, but I did go out to Washington, D.C., and I went through their vault of stuff on the Edmund Fitzgerald, and I saw all of these photographs. And that is maybe the most damaged ship I've ever seen. It is unbelievably beat up. It took its final moments were very violent. In all likelihood, it hit the bottom of the floor of Lake Superior while its stern section was still at the surface.
Right. It's like a 700-foot ship, and the lake is 500 feet deep there.
Yeah, and it's real interesting for people that are into math. That's exactly so. It's 729 feet long, and it's in a little over 500 feet of water. Now, they measured the two sections of the Fitzgerald that are still in one piece, the bow section, which is standing upright, and the stern section, which is inverted. They measured that. They come to about 500 feet. 200 feet just accordioned and blew away when it hit the bottom. The math makes you believe also, there are a lot of reasons that you believe, or I do, and a lot of people, I think the majority at this point, that it's submarined. The idea that no SOS was made, I think, disproves the idea that it broke in half on the surface. I've written a book, the Carl Bradley book, was about a boat that did just that. And while the boat sank in about 7 minutes, they got out multiple SOSs, and people knew they were in trouble. The Fitzgerald would have had the time, certainly, to send out a mayday message, and they didn't. That suggests to me that this happened in such a sudden way that it took them by surprise. I'm not talking to the Coast Guard and so forth. I'm not at all surprised by the idea that this thing is pitching heavily in really big waves. And, you know, as it gets lower and lower in the water, the waves are rolling over the back of the boat, slamming up against the pilot house. One time, the bow dips into the water at fairly deep, then pops back up just like it's supposed to. And you can almost picture in your mind McSorley looking at, say, his first mate and saying, well, that better not happen again. And so they get hit by a pair of waves, and Bernie Cooper talked about this, because they got hit by the waves. These were following seas, so the Anderson was getting it before the Fitzgerald. There were two seas of monstrous size that they went by the Anderson. They hit the Anderson and went by. And he tried to do some calculating, and he thinks those were the two seas that would have done in the Fitzgerald. The first one would dip it under the water, the bow section. The second would make sure it didn't come back up. And it's being driven to the bottom of Lake Superior under its own power. Its own screw is turning and driving it to the bottom of the lake till it slams into the bottom of the lake, breaks up. And when I talked to somebody who's an authority on these crashes, he was an authority on airplanes that auger into water. One of the things that was almost always the case, they would break in half. The front half of the aircraft would come to rest right side up, and the other side, the back side of it, upside down, which is exactly what happened with the Fitzgerald.
Well, and it strikes me that the mystery that still does exist about it is maybe one of the things that continues the mystique, if you will.
I think absolutely that's true. I really do. I think the Lightfoot song obviously gave everybody reason to look into it a little bit. When you see what happened there, the mystery is what this is all about. The Carl Bradley, everybody knows what happened, you know, because there were two survivors. The Fitzgerald, I always thought, was about a boat. And it's about the mystery of how this sank. People will argue this, and they still do. They very heatedly so argue what happened to the Fitz. I think we like a mystery, you know, as a general rule. We like things that kind of tease us in its own way because we have no way of settling. And I can't imagine that there will ever be a day that technology will allow us to see really what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Well, Michael Schumacher, thanks for giving us some thoughts about it in the meantime.
Well, it was my pleasure. It's one of those stories that I seem to tell every year at this time. And, you never get tired of it. Because I'm as interested in the mystery as anyone else.